This is the Venturing Angler Podcast. I'm Tim Harden. In this episode, we'll be chatting with Joe Wellborn of Bull Sugar about the environmental crisis in the Everglades. Let's chat with Joe. Joe Wellborn of Bull Sugar. Thanks for joining the podcast, Joe.
You're welcome.
Bull Sugar, what is Bull Sugar?
Bull Sugar is a water advocacy group founded out of Stuart, Florida, with the mission of trying to resolve the water flow and the water management problems that have plagued Florida for the last 40-plus years. A lot of people aren't aware that Florida has a natural kind of grass river that where the watershed began around Kissimmee Basin, which is north of Orlando, if you're not familiar with Florida geography. And as the water flowed, it flowed and spread across the center of the state, ultimately hitting Lake Okeechobee. Years back, the Army Corps of Engineers began to dig canals to connect the Gulf of Mexico to the Atlantic. So a lot of that spoil was used to build a dike. They call it a dike. Ultimately, it's a dam. And that dam has permanently disrupted the natural sheet flow of water that is often referred to as the river of grass. And that sheet flow was very important because it cleaned the water as it flowed down, but it fed the Everglades. The Everglades is a very diverse but sensitive area of Florida where the fresh water coming down through this basin in the center of the state helps to balance the salinity and prevent saltwater intrusion. So Bull Sugar began to notice a big problem when we had heavy rainfall periods. The rain was not allowed to flow, so then the officials in charge of managing our water in Florida would start back pumping and forcing this water out the Caloosahatchee, which is a river that flows to the west into the Gulf of Mexico, and the St. Lucie, which flows to the east into the Atlantic. The problem with forcing that water through those two artificial pathways is either of those estuaries, or both of those estuaries, are very sensitive to fresh water. They're high salinity estuaries, they're saltwater estuaries, and they can't take the fresh water. Not to mention the fresh water is often laden with different phosphates and residual fertilizers and other things that just don't belong in those environments. So you end up changing the environment, kills the grass, it kills other life in those two estuaries, in the St. Lucie and the Caloosahatchee. And then we get these big algae blooms, and that's when it gets really nasty.
So I think the conversation about the Everglades has been growing and growing and growing in recent years, and maybe because we've got new forms of media, whether it's social media or more online media, the word's spreading more. But one of the first things you said is this has been an ongoing issue for many years. And this is going to sound ridiculous, but I was watching an episode of The Golden Girls the other day. And the episode starts with one of the characters talking about how horrible it is to hear all this bad news coming out of the Everglades. And are they going to solve the water crisis? And I thought, wow, that show was on in like the late or mid-1980s or something. You know, that said, it's at least more than my entire life that this has been, there's been a dire issue there. And I think maybe something that helped escalate it to a national conversation was these algae blooms that were in the news a lot last summer, which are pretty startling. I think it was a national news story. It was on all the networks that beaches were closed last June or July because the water was green with toxic algae.
That's correct.
Big fish kills, and you can see aerial photos of where the water is being separated by, I guess, by canals.
Correct.
And it's terrifying. As I understand it, a lot of that came down to water control issues in Lake Okeechobee. And so that sounds like sort of a complicated mess.
Yeah, so the problem with the Lake Okeechobee story and the way it's resonated through the years is that it's a political problem. This is not a science problem. Nobody is standing back debating the merits of what needs to happen. The politics are the challenge that stands in the way of remediating these discharges and reestablishing the sheet flow. The other big element of it is the money involved. A lot of people don't realize that the federal farm subsidies from the national level are the engine fuel that powers the decision making and the selection process of what happens directly in Florida water policy. So money comes from Washington. It goes to two special interest group, large corporations that control the land south of Lake Okeechobee where sugar cane is grown. And then those groups turn around and divvy that money out to any and all local politicians. And that in turn influences the decision-making process. So decisions are being made not on the merits of whether the water should flow south or not. Decisions are being made on the merits of what special interest groups want to happen to that water. So many groups have tried to fight this battle and just ultimately get bogged down because there's so many lobbyists, there's so many special interests, there's so much power in the groups that control the decision of who gets into the agencies that set the policy for water. And that's where we stand now. We've got an overwhelming amount of politicians that either don't understand the issue or refuse to get involved because they have a vested interest on the wrong side of doing what's best for these estuaries.
So from what I understand, that includes the governor and your both senators at least.
That's correct. Now, I will say we do have a tremendous amount of support behind Florida Senate President Joe Negron. Joe Negron's constituents in his home area is the Stewart area, which is, if you're not familiar, the St. Lucie area. And Joe has taken a lot of personal and political risk in fighting this cause with us. And we are at a point where more has happened in the last 2 years than maybe the last 10 or 15 years.
Right.
We've got a significant amount of positive headway. You know, a lot of times when we have conversations and we speak to people about the problems in the Everglades, it's dire and it seems like it's overwhelming and it's too hard to fix. It's not too hard to fix. We are making progress. People are slowly becoming aware. And there are a few politicians that are starting to turn an eye to see, wait a minute, my constituents care about this issue. So one of the really, really important things to, if you don't understand the technical nuances of the problem, that's okay. You don't have to understand why it's the way it is. You don't have to understand the nuances of how to fix it. What you have to understand is you need to speak to your local representatives and let them write their letters, send them emails, let them know that you are not happy with the way this process works, because the process is completely usurping what the general population involved in the elections want. For example, a couple years back we had an election to add an amendment to our state constitution. 75% of the populace vote voted to set aside money off of a dock stamp fee, for a reserve to buy land to remediate these discharges and this flow. That has not happened. That money has been used for alternative reasons, completely outside of the scope of what was originally structured. So I think as we've gained momentum in finding a solution to let water flow through a dynamic reservoir, we're never going to get it back to its natural flow path. There's too many people involved. The area's too developed. But there is a sufficient amount of space to get enough water that we can stop the discharges and further decreased damage that's happening to the Everglades because of being deprived of fresh water.
It seems like just even beyond the ecological need, that it's in the economic best interest and the social best interest of Floridans, because people who live in Florida want to be by water that's healthy and clean and produces
exactly.
Great fishing. Rather than other interests, which include things like sugar farms.
Well, that's what's so perplexing about this problem is people refer to Florida as the Sunshine State, and I kind of think that's not quite the whole picture, because Arizona's got sunshine. There's a lot of other states that have sunshine. What people really come here for is it's the combination of warm weather and water.
Yep.
People don't come here to go visit the sugar farms. They don't come here to drive around and look at special interest properties. They come here to enjoy a harmonious, peaceful environment. And I find it just incredibly ironic that our governor, Rick Scott, stands up on the public stage and says tourism is one of his number one concerns for the state. He's going to grow tourism. He's going to do everything that's good for tourism because it impacts the entire state. However, this one issue alone can dramatically impact negatively the perception of Florida in the world realm.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're outside of Florida and you don't really know Florida very well, and you're thinking about planning your first trip, and you see news feeds of algae blooms and people, you know, bans, and you can't go into the water, you're not going to sit down and really delve into where to go and where not to go. You're just going to probably choose another destination.
Absolutely. And I know from my own personal experience, I 6 or so years ago decided I was going to go fish in Florida, and it was going to be a one-time thing. I was going to fish in Florida, and then, you know, there's plenty of places out there to fish. Why would I keep going to Florida when I can go to other places? I have been back now. I think I've been there 6 or 7 times in the last 6 years, maybe more. I can't get enough of it. Last year, my entire trip was affected by the situation. So I was going to fish fish beaches that were closed. There's 10-pound snook cruising some of these beaches north of Miami, and maybe elsewhere too. I don't know the whole state that well. Couldn't do that. Went to the Everglades and dead seagrass everywhere. We were talking yesterday, and I didn't mention this, but I've been fortunate to be able to travel, and people say, you know, what's one of the best places you've ever been? And I always say the Everglades. It's this amazing ecosystem that is indescribable and incredibly unique. And because I go there annually, I can see how much changes very quickly. It's like watching someone age that you only see once a year. And it's pretty dramatic. So dead seagrass has been an issue that I've seen a lot the last 2 years. Guides talk about how the fishing's changed. That there's a huge dependency on that water flow.
There is.
And I think that's part of the thing that confuses a lot of people. What's not happening, and you sort of alluded to it before with when you're talking about the salinity, but what's not happening when water's making it to the Everglades? How's that affecting the ecosystem at large and then the fish?
So when you look at the historical flow path of fresh water down through the River of Grass, through Okeechobee, there was two main points where the water tended to move. One is the Shark Slough, Shark River Slough, and the Taylor Slough. And those natural flow patterns have been disrupted. So specifically, I can speak to the Taylor Slough because it ultimately comes down and that water reaches an area of the lower southern Everglades called Garfield Bight. There's a little creek that's called Taylor Creek. And I fish a tournament down there annually, and my tournament partner and I went back into Garfield Bight, which is an area, I don't know, if you look at it on a map, it's just east of Flamingo, which is the main ramp in the park. And we pushed back into this, what was used to be years prior, a very robust grass bed, you know, a lot of life, clean water. We got back there, the water temperature was approaching 100 degrees, completely stagnant, with clumps, giant masses of algae at the surface.
Oh, wow.
It was so, the stench alone was overwhelming. There was no life. There's absolutely no life. And yeah, I'm not a hydrologist. I'm not a biologist. I'm just a guy that loves fishing. And to see this, you ask yourself why and how this happened. It's obvious. There was no fresh water moving through that system, flushing out the whatever the algae is eating, the dead grass, and the temperatures were escalating because this water sat really shallow, and it sat stagnant, and it sat still. And when you have those conditions, it's not conducive to life. It looked like a moonscape. And we went even further west out through some of the big open grass flats that used to be just miles and miles of pristine grass flats. Looked like dead zones. It didn't even look like the same place. And that was only 1 year from the prior year.
Yeah, and I've encountered that too, where it's startling how much you see change. And it's not something that you need to look for. I saw a guy at Flamingo trying to get seagrass out of his motor, and you know, it's on everything. Things look different. You can't find the fish as easily. And this is a place where just 6 years ago I was blown away with the amount of life. Everything from sharks to porpoises to manatee to tarpon, you know, redfish and everything. And I mean, you just name it. Alligators and crocodiles. It's
That's
just
right.
This mix of, and largemouth bass. It's this dynamic ecosystem that's globally so unique and is deteriorating like crazy. What can anglers do?
Well, anglers can, first of all, get involved with bullsugar.org. Bullsugar.org is a portal that can give you quick and easy access to enough information to feel confident of that you understand the issue. The issue at its bare bones, the very simple, just breaking it down, politicians are standing in the way of correcting that natural flow of fresh water that comes down and rehydrates the Everglades. So anglers, number one, just take a little time. What I have found, because I run a business and I'm very busy and I don't often have time to proactively go look for new information or new news, I sign up for the newsletter. Sign up for the bullsugar.org newsletter. And their newsletters come out periodically, once a week, sometimes twice a week if something pressing has happened. But it's a very succinct, good news, bad news type of format. Okay, here's the bad news we discovered this week. We found something else amuck. Or here's the good news. We've made progress. It's not always doom and gloom because, you know, we are making progress. That's a very, it's very important that you understand that even though the prior 40 years and a litany of other groups have not had as much success as we're having now, we are gaining, we are having success, specifically with SB 10. That SB 10, Senate Bill 10, was the law that Joe Negron spearheaded. So anglers, get involved. Secondly, come see Florida. Come see it for yourself. You know, a lot of people don't understand, you don't have to suffer to enjoy the Everglades. It's very, very close to modern amenities. You can stay in Miami, you can stay in Key Largo, you can stay in Alamorada. It's very accessible. So you can go out and enjoy some of the rawest, most beautiful natural habitat and species that you can't find anywhere else and have a great day doing it, and then go back to the creature comforts of a nice hotel or a resort or something like that. So you know, it's not like you got to fly out to the middle of the Himalayas. You know, you're not completely isolated. It is a good combination of getting back to the old Florida nature and having access to the amenities. So first, educate yourself. Secondly, come visit it. And then when you're here, talk to the rangers. Talk, you know, go let people know that you are interested. You're a stakeholder, even though you may not be from Florida. You have an interest in the Everglades because that's part of what makes Florida the fishing capital of the world. So if our governor really cares about tourism, he has to really understand fishing is a big component of that. Secondly, water quality is a big component of that. People don't come to Florida to sit in their hotel rooms or to tour the sugar farms. They come to walk the beaches. They come to enjoy the shops and to enjoy what's outside. And if you've got toxic algae, you know, releasing these plumes of stench and disgust, they're not going to come. It's having an impact on our economy. It's not just about the fishermen. It's about Floridians as a whole.
Well put. I second that. To get on the email newsletter and check out more at bullsugar.org. There's lots of useful information. It's a great way to learn about what's happening. There's blog posts. And also, you guys are great about sending out petitions and helping people add their voice, which usually takes about a minute, and I think it's important to show how much of us all come together on this.
I'd like to make one other point. This point is going to seem a little odd, but we've been battling the different interests that are adverse to letting this water flow for reasons I can't comprehend. But this isn't a zero-sum game, and what I mean by that is this isn't a situation where Bull Sugar wins and the other stakeholders that maybe aren't anglers lose, right? This is a situation where if we don't solve this problem, the communities that live in the EAA, the Everglades Agricultural Area, that's the area south of Okeechobee that seems to be the hot point of contention. You know, we're all in this together. We are Floridians. This water, there's another backdrop topic in that water that sheet flows is what ultimately recharges our aquifers. Like, you can't drink salt water in Florida. Like, we don't have this desalinization capabilities to give water to everybody here. That water has to get back into the aquifer. And from Okeechobee to Everglades is when a lot of that happens. The grass cleans the water, gets it back into the aquifer. So I just want to make a point that it's not us against them. It's we're trying to make people aware that water is going to be our next major crisis. If we don't do something about this 50 years from now, we're going to look back and we're going to say, oh my God, this was the Michigan Flint Creek all
right.
over again. You know, everybody's sounding the alarms and nobody's paying any attention. So I just want people to understand that we're not against agriculture. We're not against the communities that are in the EAA. What we're trying to do is reestablish the natural flow and cycle that would benefit all of us, not just the fishermen.
Good. That's great. Well, thanks so much, Joe.
No, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.